thanks for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour. There are a lot of other NPR podcasts, like Intelligence Squared US, Oxford-style debates live from New York City. Intelligence Squared US brings together the world's leading authorities on the day's most important issues for intelligent discussion, grounded in facts and informed by reasoned analysis. Rethink your point of view with Intelligence Squared US. Find it on iTunes under podcasts. And that's the kicky music that means it is time again for Pop Culture Happy Hour. I'm Linda Holmes. I'm the editor of NPR's pop culture and entertainment blog, Monkey See. On this week's show, we'll talk about the realest of real topics, authenticity, how it's used, why it matters, and whether you can get it from Zach Galifianakis. Then we will do one of my very favorite things and take a little quiz, just because. And as always, we'll close the show with what's making us happy this week. Before we get started here in historic Studio 44, let's go around the table. Stephen Thompson, what do you do at NPR?
I am a writer and editor with NPR Music.
And Glenn Weldon, what do you do at NPR?
I write about books and comic books for the NPR website.
And joining us this week is our pal Gene Demby. Gene Demby, what do you do at NPR?
I'm the lead blogger for NPR's Code Switch.
It's awfully good to see all of you. As many of you know, Stephen is just back from South by Southwest. We are happy to have taken possession of you again from Austin.
Yeah, it's been exactly seven days since we recorded a podcast, and I have only aged 18 months in that time.
It's true. It takes a little more out of you as you get older.
Well, yeah, just accelerating toward the grave.
Yeah. Well, one of the things we were going to talk about is over the last, a week and a half ago,
yep.
Barack Obama, the president of the United States, Barack Obama.
Oh, Barack Obama. Yeah.
Barack Obama.
Nice setup there, NPR host.
You might have heard of him, you know. Appeared on the Funny or Die series Between Two Ferns with Zach Galifianakis. Now, Zach Galifianakis does this series where he plays a sort of aggressive, angry, repressed, know-nothing, profane host of a talk show who sits down with someone and...
On kind of a creepy, low-budget set.
That's why it's called Between Two Ferns. It's kind of a low-budget set. And they sit there and become increasingly baffled by why he's such a jerk. And he's done this show with Justin Bieber and John Hamm and, you know, a variety of different people. Some he has worked with, Bradley Cooper and some other folks. But it's safe to say that this was used to promote healthcare.gov.
So do you go to any websites that are .coms or .nets, or do you mainly just stick with .govs?
No, actually, we go to .govs. Have you heard of healthcare.gov?
Here we go. Okay, let's get this out of the way. What did you come here to plug?
Well, first of all, I think it's fair to say that I wouldn't be with you here today if I didn't have something to plug. Have you heard of the Affordable Care Act?
Oh, yeah, I heard about that. That's the thing that doesn't work. Why would you get the guy that created the Zune to make your website?
Healthcare.gov works great now. And millions of Americans have already gotten health insurance plans. And what we want is for people to know that you can get affordable health care. And most young Americans right now, they're not covered. And the truth is that they can get coverage all for what it costs you to pay your cell phone bill.
Is this what they mean by drones?
Well, Glenn, why don't you set this up a little bit in terms of kind of the initial conversation that we had?
Sure. I got an email from a friend of mine who is a political speechwriter. His name is Paul Orzelak, and he makes a pretty good living as a speechwriter nowadays. And he was talking about how reaching the millennials is a very tough thing for people in the political spectrum to do, and how they distrust, they have an automatic distrust of anything that comes off as theater. And just was asking my opinion of this particular episode.
Of how to reach the young people.
That I know everything about. And I basically said, you know, as a piece of political theater, as a promotion for healthcare.gov, as an episode of Between Two Ferns, however, B- C+. This show has a very strict format, even though it doesn't seem like it. But if you watch enough of them, you see Zach Galifianakis, who is ill-prepared and passive-aggressive and sometimes outright aggressive, and the guest starts out being surprised by this and then eventually gets a couple zingers in.
I have to know, what is it like to be the last black president?
Seriously? What's it like for this to be the last time you ever talk to a president?
It must kind of stink, though, that you can't run, you know, three times.
No, actually, I think it's a good idea. If I ran a third time, it'd be sort of like doing a third Hangover movie. Didn't really work out very well, did it?
Right.
And everybody gets a couple zingers in. Justin Bieber got a couple zingers
yeah,
in.
That's true.
And Justin Bieber, no matter what you say about him, not H.L. Mencken. You know, you can't trust him to come up with a spry riposte. That's not what he does. So Scott Aukerman, who is the director of this series, has done several interviews about how this came about, but he doesn't like to talk about how it's actually scripted, how it's actually shot.
And how it's edited. It's clearly right. edited extensively. There are a lot of cutaways. There are a lot of camera frozen on one or the other
right.
where
right.
they could very easily...
It's supposed to look awkward.
Right. So, but that's the thing. And Obama got a couple zingers in. I thought maybe too many. You know, he did come off as prickly, but that's what everybody on that show does. That's the mm-hmm. that's the bit. But again, I thought it was perfectly fine, but didn't quite hit the cylinders that a normal episode of that show would.
Here's the sort of the question that I have. It's an interesting, because I think what your friend was getting at in part is that they're trying to portray a certain kind of authenticity, a certain kind of being a down-to-earth person.
Yeah.
And it's funny because obviously the persona that you are adopting when you're on Between Two Ferns is not authentic. What's supposed to be authentic is your performance of that. What's supposed to be authentic is you being the kind of person who's in on the joke enough to go on Between Two Ferns. Gene, did you watch the Between Two Ferns there?
I did. There's almost like no space in which the President of the United States could appear that would not sound sort of shilly.
Sure.
Even if you get those kind of candid shots by Pete Souza of him like walking bow, it's always like what they're selling is, you know,
right.
this idea of the president as just, you know, a person deep in thought, but also a regular guy.
Right. If you're not selling anything else, you're selling your presidency.
Right, right.
I mean, so it's like, I think you're right.
Right. And I guess, I don't know why that made my antenna twitch in a way that, I mean, obviously, if Justin Bieber is on Between Two Ferns, he's selling Justin Bieber, too.
Right.
But for some reason, the Obama thing seemed much more artificial. I
mean, for some reason, there's no equivalency between Barack Obama and Justin Bieber. I don't understand. Explain.
I mean, the other thing we were talking about is how just fundamentally inauthentic the experience of the presidency must be. I mean,
oh,
this
God,
is a guy who
yeah.
doesn't have... He doesn't open doors for himself. He doesn't have keys. He doesn't have a wallet. He travels in a car with 3-inch thick glass. I mean,
yeah.
It is weird. You have to then buy the idea that this guy who is doing all these things of great import all the time and is watching Between Two Ferns and knows kind of all the
right.
beats, as you said.
Well, and is up on the Hangover movies.
Right, exactly. To make a joke about
that,
how
that
bad
the
third one
is.
Yeah.
And that's what you're trying to, like, I think when they talk about authenticity, they're trying to use participation in a knowing comedy mm-hmm. as a way to create something human, which really is the same thing Justin Bieber was doing. Interestingly enough,
sure.
I think it's a way to try to appear knowing about your image and therefore more kind of relatable and more kind of personal and, as I said, more like a human.
Yeah.
So in a way, Obama and Justin Bieber are trying to do this.
Exactly. But there's a long history of this. Richard Nixon went on Laughing and said, "Suck it to me."
Actually,
right.
Glenn, I brought a clip of that.
Oh, no. I don't think we could get Mr. Nixon to stand still for a sock it to me.
Sock it to me?
Sock it to me?
Sock it to me?
Awful.
Yeah, it's super, super awful.
Yeah.
He screws up the line.
Yeah. Anyway.
How hard?
Richard Nixon on Laughing. Clinton on the Arsenio Hall Show playing the sax.
And answering the question, boxers or briefs.
On MTV, right, sure.
Right.
If we're judging on a sliding scale here, I think this is the one that's probably the most effective because he did seem somewhat at home, but it's just part of the theater. As soon as I saw some pundit saying this was a risky move and he pulled it off, I knew that they had won because that
yeah.
is what they're going for. Not
right.
necessarily. I mean, people go to healthcare.gov, great, but really what they're doing at this stage in his presidency is trying to build his legacy as somebody who's relatable, as somebody who does something remotely risky because he's being seen as kind of safe, even though there's no real risk here.
No.
Let's agree that there was not something he could screw up. People will make political points on this, but as a piece of theater, I thought it worked.
Right. And one of the other things that Gene and I talked about was that this idea of trying to appear authentic, this idea of trying to appear somehow like the turning of your public persona into like a realness contest is like such a weird... It's such a weird thing. And Gene was talking about this a little bit. Why don't you tell the nice people what we were talking about with regard to hip-hop?
So when I was first started listening to hip-hop in earnest in the early 90s, that was like the beginning of like everyone was rapping about keep it real and these people aren't real. And it was like invariably if you watched MTV or BET during Rap City or Yo MTV Raps, there were like videos of people in alleys with burning oil drums waving baseball bats. Like that is not an experience.
That's not an authentic experience.
It's not an authentic
there
experience.
There aren't just burning oil drums.
Exactly. That was kind of the... Those those became signifiers of realness, right?
And was necessary to stand in contrast to much of what had been popular in rap up until that point.
Right. You have your MC Hammers and
your Vanilla Ice.
Right, exactly. Dancing and kind of much more poppy sounding music. But even now, I mean, there's authenticity policing, right? I mean, there was a big hullabaloo a couple years ago because Rick Ross, whose whole image is that he's a drug kingpin, it came out that he was like a corrections officer or whatever. Yeah. And like, what was so funny about it is like, it didn't really matter when it came out. Right. I mean, everyone was like, oh, look at him. He's not really a drug kingpin, which of course we all knew that, right? I mean, that wasn't a thing that was ever anyone actually believed. But also like, it was like one of those moments like where it became clear that everyone wanted this idea of authenticity, right? He had to speak to this kind of criminal life that he never lived.
Gene, you're going to relate it to hip-hop. I'm going to relate it to a Monty Python skit. So let's be our authentic selves. there's a skit called Four Yorkshiremen in which these four guys are sitting around drinking wine at the close to the end of their life, talking about how poor they were when they grew up. And this is the point. The point is that these goalposts constantly move. Somebody is more authentic than somebody else.
We used to live in this tiny old tumble-down house with great big holes in the roof. House. You were lucky to live in a house. We used to live in one room, all 26 of us, no furniture, half the floor was missing. We're all huddled together in one corner for fear of falling. You were lucky to have a room. We used to have to live in the corridor. Oh, we used to dream of living in a corridor.
Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it builds to their father killing them. So that's exactly the point. The point is that authenticity is a fetish object of the young. The young care about stripping away all these comforting fictions the bourgeois.
You know, by the time you're, I don't know, 40, you sort of have that experience of being like, I'm okay with fictions.
Exactly. Because you know why?
I don't want to know your authentic self. Like,
because you know you're going to die.
So much of, it just in our lives, so much of what we think the ideals we are living up to are, they have collapsed around us. You know, we a lot of us have gotten divorced. A lot of us have lost jobs. A lot of us have gone through, we told ourselves early in our lives that everything was going to go fine, and it didn't. Mm-hmm. And so I think as you get older, you become a little bit more comfortable with the understanding that, yes, these things get compromised along the way. And being purist about where we think we should have come from and where we think we should be going, that gets a little bit blurrier.
And I think you also realize more and more that everything has an element of performance to it. And that's not necessarily a negative thing. Like, every image, and certainly every image of an artist or a public figure, has an element of performance. And if it didn't, you would be intruding on someone's very personal self in a way that you wouldn't even necessarily like. Mm-hmm. So to me, I would rather believe that when I see a celebrity going, for example, having their picture taken, I would much rather look at a celebrity having their picture taken on a red carpet than a celebrity having their picture taken genuinely just trying to take out the trash.
Right.
Because that's a level of authenticity where it's like, I don't need to be inside that level of somebody's personal self. I don't need to sit here and think like, are Jay-Z and Beyonce really like that at home? Like, what are they like at home?
Yeah, I would much rather fixate on the fiction of that.
But you'll tie yourself into knots. And to me, where I satisfy some of this curiosity is in reality television.
Right.
Like, I enjoy sitting around trying to figure out, like, this is what I wrote about The Bachelor not long ago. There's always a real story there somewhere of the making of a show. It doesn't bother me that there's an additional layer of kind of performative goofery on top of that. You're still getting at something human and real. And I think when you look at something like the Between Two Ferns, what you hope is that you understand something about what the real story is, which is the story Glenn was talking about trying to reach millennials. The interesting authentic story is the rise of kind of web series as a form of comedy that is used to legitimize people as cool. Because what Justin Bieber wants to get from that when he does it is not just to be seen as authentic, but to be seen as cool. It's a curious phenomenon, but there's always a real story in all of these authenticity policing things. And it doesn't bother me that much as an adult to understand, like, oh, and that's okay. Like, it's okay to understand that, yes, sometimes people allow their songs to be used in commercials. It's not like, you sold out, you're not real anymore. Like, you're actually no more real for not making any money, and you're no less real for making money necessarily.
Well, and yeah, the whole business of criticizing musicians for allowing their songs to appear in ads, I mean, especially in this day and age, if you don't allow musicians to put their music in ads, you are making music strictly the domain of either very rich people or desperately poor people.
Right, that's
and
true.
You are completely denying any sort of opportunity to create a musical middle class. And I mean, I've talked to enough indie rock musicians who have under the table said, yeah, I couldn't really do this if my parents didn't have a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And that taints the pool of entire genres of music if people can't make money from it.
Right. That's exactly true.
Podcasts, comedy podcasts in particular, kind of hit a sweet spot. So you know what a comedian's like on stage. You know their act. The comedy podcast gives you an in on their personality.
Right.
That's all it is, wall-to-wall personality, and you can either react to it or not react to it. At the height of the poker craze, there was a show on Bravo called Celebrity Poker Showdown, and what I loved about that show is you got to see celebrities play a game. You can kind of get an insight on what Chris Kattan is really like. You can see what Andy Dick is really like.
Yeah.
And you know how much time and money I've wasted going through Chris Kattan's garbage.
You also get a sense
wondering
of people...
what's Chris Kattan really
you
like.
You get a sense of like, oh, this is... Norm MacDonald is actually pretty cool. And also, Michael Ian Black is really cool, but also that guy.
Yeah.
Pretty much that guy.
No, of course.
Be. But of all the pieces of media I've seen on this topic that I think really get to it, I'm going to choose a thing that is, on one level, the most artificial, which is theater, right? It's artifice. There's a play by John Guare called 6 Degrees of Separation, which is about this very wealthy couple who have an experience. And they turn that experience into a series of anecdotes that they take from dinner party to dinner party. And over the course, the story of the play is one of those people realizing that when you turn an event into an anecdote, you leech from it life, color, meaning, which is a fascinating thing for a playwright to
Right.
And that's that. I really thought that got to something really smart.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's one of the things people like about following celebrities on Twitter is that you feel like you do get a little bit of a sense of whether you would enjoy hanging out with this person or not. You know, that's why people worry about stuff like, is someone ghostwriting this person's tweets? Because, like, there are certain people where you're like, look, nobody is ghostwriting this person's tweets. Okay? Like, if they were, they'd be doing it differently.
I was going to say, John Cusack's ghostwriter would spell a whole lot better.
but you get that feeling of, like, I think I would enjoy this person because I follow them on Twitter. They seem like a nice person.
Gene, in the discussions going into the show, was talking about advertising and how certain advertising tries to present itself as specially authentic. I seem to recall something along the lines of, yeah, this cheese is the realest. I remember a couple years ago, or 10 years ago probably, some of my colleagues at The Onion being asked, like, what is the greatest comedy you've ever seen? And I think it was Todd Hansen said that the greatest piece of comedy was this Go-Gurt commercial that was all like, yeah, you know, like skateboarders and everything. I'm reminded of a David Cross routine where he's talking about how certain advertising that's trying to sell mundane products in incredibly cool ways.
And then they attribute these qualities that don't, you know, to products that don't merit them, you know, like eggs or something. And they have this new campaign, you know, Henderson Valley eggs! You're gonna love our eggs! Yeah. This ain't your daddy's egg.
Oh my god.
Yeah. I mean, it's very true. I suspect the people in advertising would tell you that, like, realness is incredibly important to convey to people. It's sort of like the more fake things are, the more they need to tell you how real they are, like salad dressing. Like,
or people.
This is the most real.
This is the conversation. I mean, this is the commercial. It turned out to be a commercial, but remember the people who were strangers who were kissing? Remember that was everywhere?
Mm-hmm.
It turned out to be an elaborate hoax.
Well, they're all models.
They're all models, and it was like clothing that they were actually selling. Uh-huh. But the idea was like, oh, look at these people having this real experience.
Mm-hmm. And the entire time as that's going on, everybody's like, oh, I really hope that's authentic. No.
I know, exactly.
Well, and but this is one of the reasons why I think people for a while got so into like blooper shows and America's Funniest Home Videos. And then what ruins something like America's Funniest Home Videos is when you realize that like somebody is letting his 3-year-old hit him in the ghoulies with a plastic bat because they want to be on TV.
And win $10,000.
The ones that you know are genuine, like the ones that you look at and you go, oh, that was authentic. It felt real, you know, in a time when nothing sort of felt real because it was the 80s.
Right. Well, and you've talked about that a little bit in political theater as well, the bit of Marco Rubio reaching across the room to get a drink of water in the middle of a speech, and how, as really basically mundane as that is, the fact that it is this moment of quote-unquote realness in an incredibly inauthentic environment was incredibly intoxicating.
At least it's unscripted. Anytime you see anything that you know is unscripted.
We should just, like, leave all our foul-ups on the show. Jessica, don't cut the show this week. Yeah.
But this goes back to the Young thing. Like, the Beats valued unmediated experience. The phrase naked lunch comes from William S. Burroughs' thing about where the moment when you realize what's actually shivering at the end of your fork. And then Dogma 95, that film movement, had a manifesto, which, by the way, if anybody comes up to you with a manifesto or uses the term, wake up, sheeple, walk the other way. Because that is that really annoying kind of authenticity. Like, what?
Right.
Is there anything more annoying than somebody saying, I'm just keeping it real, I'm just being my authentic self?
Right. Yeah. The keep it real people are the worst people on any reality show.
Yep,
absolutely. I'm
not here to make friends. Yeah. I'm just being honest. All right, well, we are always interested in your authentic self. So come and find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or on the blog at npr.org/PCHH and talk to us about what you think about Between Two Ferns, what you think about authenticity, and make sure that you're entirely real at all times. Really. So speaking of real, it's time for the real important moment of this show, and that is when I give a quiz.
Yes.
Now, I thought hard about what to do this week because I didn't want it to be too taxing for Stephen, especially.
God bless you, Linda. Jeez.
Because
I have notes. I can keep notes on each section of the show, and this one just says quiz.
Because it was, I wanted to make it easy for you. You know, this is a segment that I can just take out of everybody else's hands.
God bless you.
So the quiz this week is called Paint or Perp. And this is a quiz in which I'm going to read you a series of things, mostly one word, occasionally two, that is either the name of an episode of Law & Order SVU or a Sherwin-Williams paint color. Awesome. And I want you to know, you'll be surprised how much you can't tell. So we will start with Gene. Are you ready?
Okay, let's do it.
Okay. Serendipity. Paint color or SVU episode?
Oof.
Serendipity.
That sounds like it has to be a paint color. It's not dark enough
but
to be.
But what color? What color is serendipity?
I'm thinking like a fuchsia.
Sort of, yeah, sort
that of. Is an episode of Law & Order SVU.
What could possibly happen? What's serendipitous on that show?
What's not? What's not said? Stephen Thompson.
Yes.
Nuance.
I'm going to go with paint color.
That is a paint color.
It's a muted color, an earth tone with a hint of pastel.
It's a sort of a grayish white.
There you go. That's what I was trying to say.
It's very subtle.
Glenn Weldon, Nocturne.
Nocturne. It's a little too highfalutin for SVU, and there's no panties involved, so I'm going to say paint.
It is an episode of SVU.
Do you know what the plots of these episodes are?
Most of them, no. Gene Demby, Anonymous.
SVU.
That is actually
a shabby paint color. What?
That is a greenish dark gray. Can you imagine painting your living room Anonymous?
Yeah, why would you name
it's
a painter?
Painted Anonymous.
It's like they gave up.
I do think that naming, that painting your living room Anonymous might lead to you being in an SVU episode. Don't go in a guy's apartment if it's painted Anonymous. Stephen Thompson,
yes.
Harvester.
Harvester. I'm trying to picture what the color would be like every time. I'm going to go with Law & Order SVU episode.
That is a gold color.
That would have been the color. Like you were harvesting grain, right, but I felt it was too close to a color and therefore must have been.
You were thinking more organ harvesting. Glenn Weldon, pure. Pure.
Well, that's not a special victim. That's got to be a color.
That is an episode.
So this is basically impossible.
Gene Demby, Storm.
That's a paint.
It's an episode.
No!
Stephen Thompson, Retreat.
Paint.
That is a gray paint.
Yes! I'm doing better than you.
Actually, yeah, you've got 2 out of 3.
Glenn Weldon, Knight. N-I-G-H-T.
SVU.
Yes.
Yeah, Knight and Nocturne.
It is.
They're running out of...
Yes. Adjectives for dark things.
They're like gloaming.
Gene Demby, Rooftop.
What could that possibly be describing? If it was a paint, what would be?
It'd be a slate.
It'd like, be a red,
like shingles.
Rooftop.
They could call it shingle.
Paint. It's a paint.
Episode.
No, I led you wrong, buddy. Sorry about that.
Yeah, he's doing it accidentally. No,
yeah. Oh, I seem to be pulling into the lead. I'm so sorry.
Stephen Thompson.
Yep.
Sociable.
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 That's paint, because why would you call an episode sociable?
It is paint. It's a warm beige.
Killing it.
Glenn Weldon. Smoked.
See smoke?
Smoked. Color.
I'm going to say SVU.
It is SVU.
All right.
Gene Demby. Inner child.
I keep saying paint, and I'm going to say SVU here. I'm just going to be paint. I'm going to say paint.
It is paint.
Yes.
It is
sooner or later, I was going to have to say, be paint.
Had to go forward.
It is a sort of a rosy beige.
Inner child?
Mm-hmm.
That's not what I would have thought.
Stephen Thompson.
Yep.
Damsel.
Oh, God. Paint.
It is. It's a lavender. Glenn Weldon.
The look on Gene Demby's face. Gene thinks I'm cheating.
How did he know?
How would I be cheating?
Damsel is so clear in an SVU episode.
No, why you wouldn't call it?
If it's said at a Renfest, yes.
Glenn Weldon, Wanderlust.
It just can't be an SVU episode. I'm going to say paint, even though it's probably SVU.
It is SVU.
At this point, I'm just dribbling the ball at half court, just running out the clock.
Back right. Turn and Wanderlust. Come on.
Gene Demby, Haystack.
SVU.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, right. It is. Stephen Thompson, Daredevil.
See, now I'm so accustomed to being right.
He really wants to win.
I can't possibly. I think I've already won. Daredevil. I'm going to say SVU.
Nope. Orange red. Orange red paint.
I outsmarted myself.
Glenn Weldon. Glenn Artifact. Artifact.
Paint.
It is paint. All it's brown.
Like all artifacts.
It's a brown paint.
It's brown.
How is that a paint?
It's if you've never painted anything artifact, you wouldn't know how lovely
they basically
it really
might
is.
As well be calling these things like using IKEA furniture names.
Yeah. That's,
these are just random words.
Yeah. They're not random. They're all related to the episode in every case.
I'm not talking about Law & Order SVU. I'm talking about the paints.
Oh, you mean the paints. Well, some artifacts are brown.
Sure, that's true.
Dirty ones are.
Dirty artifacts.
All right. Gene Demby, Grandiose.
That's a paint.
That is a paint.
Yeah.
Dark gold. Mm. Stephen Thompson.
Yeah.
Blue chip.
SVU.
Paint.
I swear it's about a basketball player.
I got overconfident.
Hey, Gene, we are catching up to Thompson.
Yeah, I know.
I noticed this. This is a roaring back.
Prevent.
Yeah, exactly. Prevent exactly. Defense. All the prevent defense does is prevent you from winning.
Exactly.
That's what they always say.
Glenn Weldon, Charisma. Charisma.
I want it to be a paint.
That's a trick question.
It's both. Do I get it? I get it.
Yeah.
I get it.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
all
yeah.
Right, I got it. Tied, Thompson.
Wait, you can't give him a full point when he would have been right either way.
Yeah, I can.
I call shenanigans.
Yeah, I can. Gene Demby, Chat Room.
Oh, that's so clearly an SVU episode.
That is also both.
Oh, my gosh. What color is Chat Room?
It's like a very ugly greenish gray.
Like a globe computer from like
1990. No, like the glow of a badly maintained cafeteria, possibly in a government building that has fallen on hard times.
Disrepair.
Yeah. So, so Chat Room is also both. Stephen Thompson.
Both. It better be both.
Escape.
Both.
No.
they both get a both and I have to escape. I'm going to say paint.
It is an episode.
Ooh.
I'm afraid.
Thompson, we are 4-4. We're all tied up.
Are you keeping track?
I am.
You guys both got freebies. this is terrible.
Glenn Weldon. Signature.
SVU.
It is SVU.
Really?
That is the final question.
Really?
By that, my tally,
it
is Gene 4, Thompson 4, Glenn 5.
Well, it is absolutely true, as Stephen pointed out, that you and Gene both had a trick question.
Yeah.
Stephen would also have gotten that right. So really,
Stephen wins.
I cheated. I ruined the quiz, but I only ruined the quiz because it was so funny to me that I ran across both Charisma and Chat Room.
Yeah.
And that they were both.
I think the important thing is that on some level, we all lost.
At some level, everyone lost, including me, because I ruined the quiz. Yeah. But I ruined it with good intentions. And that brings us to...
You were just keeping it real.
I was just keeping it real. And that brings us to our final segment, What is Making Us Happy This Week? Gene Demby, what is making you happy this week, sir?
What's making me happy this week is the Crash Course series on YouTube. I don't know if you guys have ever seen it, but John Green, who is the author, has a series of educational infotainment videos. The first series was world history, the next series was U.S. history, and the most recent series is literature. Like, you know, it's like for your smarty pants 16, 17-year-old. But it's really funny, really smart. I mainlined the entire 40 episodes of world history in like a weekend, and then I went to U.S. history. They're really, really funny. They're really smart. My boss and friend Matt Thompson was like, "You have to watch these. They're so awesome." And I was like, "Oh, whatever." And then I ended up watching one of them, and then it's like, "Fine, agriculture and Mesopotamia." And then I'd like I spent like an hour and a half like just watching them, and then I just, like dedicated an entire weekend and just like having them on in the background while I like cleaned up. They're just really fun, really smart, and he's actually a really interesting dude. I mean, so you should just check them out if you get a chance.
John Green.
Crash Course, yeah.
And we should find it.
You should find them. It's really easy to find.
Very good, very good. Stephen Thompson, what is making you happy this week?
Well, virtually all of the 7 days prior to the taping of the last episode was spent in Austin, Texas at the South by Southwest Music Festival. I can report one item from the home front. My recommendation of the Animal Planet series My Cat from Hell is that installing vertical spaces in one's house is an excellent way to make your cats less irritable and awful to be around.
How? How's it work?
If your cat has a way to climb and survey the room, he or she will be far less disagreeable. And this has already proven true with my surlier cat.
What kinds of vertical spaces have you built?
I built a... My mother built. a fairly elaborate, about 5-foot-tall structure that's cloth-covered.
Did she make it out of magazines?
She made it out of old TV guides from the early 90s.
We love you so much, Maggie.
Yeah, I ran out to the local pet store warehouse deal and bought one of these things that you screw together. And so anyway, it is working. Jackson Galaxy, right on the money so far. Took the lids off the cat boxes. You're apparently supposed to do that too. Eventually, my house will only have urine where it's supposed to have urine. I do have 3 bands to recommend for my sojourn to Texas for South by Southwest. All of them instrumental. One is called Moon Hooch, which sounds on paper like it should be terrible. It is a drummer and 2 saxophone players. It was one of the best shows I saw. It just had this incredible rhythm to it and this crazy propulsion. You couldn't not dance when you were listening to it. And actually, at one point later in the festival, that band set up on the street, and I saw people walk by, and they're just indifferently walking by, and all of a sudden they're just dancing. and they almost don't know why. You can see it like take them over. So Moon Hooch was super fun. A South Korean band called Jambinai, Jambinai, they mixed like electric guitars and drums with like really early, like ancient instruments. So they have like this stringed instrument that looks sort of like a kora and these little whistles and stuff. And they basically played like Sigur Rós meets Metallica, these instrumentals that built and built and built into this crazy storm. Very, very beautiful and still fun. And finally, a band called Anamanaguchi. They play essentially video game music, just these like zippy little earworms, but very fleshed out. I loved their record. It's really fun and playful and light. And live, they recreate them with a rock band. And so suddenly it becomes like instrumental video game music as re-envisioned by Andrew WK. And it is this just bonkers, overdriven dance party. They beam animation on all the walls, like 360 degrees in the room. It was so fun and so cool. Anamanaguchi.
Perfect. I love it. Thank you, Stephen. And thank you, bands of South by Southwest. Glenn Weldon, what is making you happy this week?
Billy on the Street is back for a second season on the Fuse Network. Now, you say to me, I've never heard of the Fuse Network. I don't have the Fuse Network. You probably do, but it's way the hell up there, up in the thousands. It's just it, like, if you've ever been switching past, like, and it's something like top 200 sexiest ex-wives of rock roadies of Las Vegas, that's your Fuse Network right there. But from 11 to 11:30 Eastern Time on Wednesday nights, it's Billy on the Street. The conceit is comedian Billy Eichner. He runs around New York City. He accosts passersby, shoves a microphone in their face and a dollar, and demands that they answer his trivia questions. And these trivia questions sometimes tend to be just, do you agree with his highly specific but fervently held opinions about various celebrities like Meryl Streep and Adele? But that's not the show. The show is how easily exasperated he becomes and how, it being New York, he gets a variety of responses. Some of them are just shock and indignation. Some of them are just genial, hey, yeah, I'll play along. Some of them are just sort of obnoxious, performative jerkiness.
Right,
of
sure.
Like, hey, let's do this, which, because New York City.
Right.
And some of them, it also being New York City, is just sort of insufficiently medicated word salad. Just crazy people. It's crazy people running up in the mouth. But he's funny. The writing of the show is funny. Not something you would normally notice on like a trivia show like this, but it's very funny. Like, if I'm describing, and it sounds to you mean, like he just yells at these people, yes, he does. That's exactly what the show is. But if you ever find yourself feeling sorry for anybody that he's interviewing, just remember that they had to sign the waiver to be on the TV. Because even being shouted out, screamed at by a towering man asking them penetrating questions about Sharon Stone, they think, yeah, I want to be on the TV.
Yeah. I saw a clip from that show. Normally what I say about that show is I can watch about 90 seconds of that show at a time. That's it for me. But I did see one today where he was doing screaming tweets. Yep. He was running around to people saying, scream this tweet from a celebrity.
Miss, for a dollar, scream this tweet from Patricia Heaton. Scream it. Cleaning out the garage this weekend. Feel bad about throwing away the boys' elementary school artwork, but trying to clear some space.
Yes, there you go. Take your dollar.
Oh, thank you.
Yes, we're screaming tweets now, motherfucker.
She's like definitely getting very into it. It was very funny.
I love the show. So Billy on the Street on the Fuse Network Wednesdays at 11.
Very, very good. Thank you, Glenn Weldon. What is making me happy this week? If you've been following me on Twitter, you know a little bit about this, but I can't remember anymore how I found this website, which is driving me crazy. But I wound up at this website called Budget Bites, which is a cooking website run by this woman who has a degree in nutrition, which is a good thing. But her primary focus is eating cheap. And so apparently she got to the point where she had like an Excel spreadsheet and she was tracking the exact cost of every ingredient and everything she made. She breaks down these recipes and tells you exactly how much they cost to make per serving and all that stuff. But mostly, as I started to look over this website, I was like, this is just all things that I would make that look reasonably easy. And I started cooking off of this website. And she has this recipe called dragon noodles that I've already made four times, I think, which has like sriracha and soy sauce and brown sugar and noodles and butter and an egg. And that's it. And it's so good. And I could eat it all day. And it takes about 5 minutes. There are a million food blogs, cooking blogs, recipe blogs, all this other stuff. And very often when you're trying to find things that are like reasonably healthy, you wind up with these super austere ideas that are like plain chicken breast, three spears of asparagus. And then you just wind up thinking about eating all the time because you're so freaking hungry. Sorry. Because she specializes in stuff that's supposed to be cheap, she makes a lot of like rice bowls and noodle bowls and beans and fills everything out with stuff like that that's relatively easy. You have to clear a pretty high bar for me to make like five of your recipes in the first 4 days. Make the apple pie baked oatmeal. If you don't like oatmeal, it's because of the texture. And if you bake it, it fixes it. And that is what I have found. So make the apple pie baked oatmeal, make the dragon noodles, make the chili lime shrimp bowls, make the golden rice bowls with the little fried egg on top. I really super love it. It's called Budget Bites, B-Y-T-E-S.
B-Y-T-E-S.
Because, you know, it's on the computer.
No, I can't. Once you said cooking blog, though, I kind of assumed.
Otherwise. Yes.
Yeah, I discovered a thing recently called Lean Cuisine.
But what I'm telling you is,
Hamburger
like,
helper.
This will make an actual, like, satisfying bowl of, like, rice and beans and spices, and it's satisfying and all that stuff. And plus, you're eating cheap. So who doesn't like that?
Sounds great.
Very, very good, and I was very grateful to find it, and I have basically been consuming her food ever since, and we'll link to it on the blog also. And that brings us to the end of our show. You can follow all of us on Twitter. You can follow me at NPRMonkeyC. You can follow Stephen at IDislikeStephen, STEPHEN. You can follow Glenn at GHWeldon, WELDON. You can follow Gene at GD215, that's GEEDEE 215. You can follow our pal Trey Graham at Trey Graham, Trey with an E, Graham like the cracker. You can follow our producer Jessica Reedy at Jessica_Reedy. You can follow our also producer Lauren Migaki at L Migaki, MIGAKI. You can follow our esteemed producer emeritus and music director Mike Katziff at Mike Katziff, KATZIF. Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides our in and out music, which you are tapping your foot to right now. So thanks to all of you guys for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks to all of you for listening, and we will see you back here next week. Thanks for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour. There are a lot of other NPR podcasts, like Intelligence Squared US, Oxford-style debates live from New York City. Intelligence Squared US brings together the world's leading authorities on the day's most important issues for intelligent discussion, grounded in facts and informed by reasoned analysis. Rethink your point of view with Intelligence Squared US. Find it on iTunes under Podcasts.